Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
And it's just me today. Kristen is out. If you heard our show yesterday, she was coughing a little bit, so she's recuperating at home. No sense spreading those germs all throughout our building. So we wish her a quick recovery. I'm sure she'll be back tomorrow. So I have a special guest on the program, at least the beginning of the program today, my friend Tracy Johnson, who used to fill in for me all the time. Welcome.
Great to be here, Steve.
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a while. I follow you on social media, though. So I feel like I know what's going on in your world. And I listen to you every day. So
I love that. I'll say this, but we're going to talk about some other stuff. But I wish it was a better occasion because our friend Paul Farrell, who was the Washington County executive, passed away this week. Age of 61, far too young. And I described it, I think, on social media as a life well lived. I mean, the collaboration he was known for, great sense of humor, getting things done, which I'm a big fan of. You knew him pretty well. You worked across a lot of different areas with him. So tell me about your friendship and your relationship with Paul.
Well, first of all, I'm honored to be able to be here and talk about him. I know so many people, were posting on Facebook, and I was like relating
well,
to their experiences.
You called me yesterday when you found out. It's like, yeah, I felt the same way.
I just wanted to call some. Yeah, yeah, so I called you. I'm like fellow elected, and I know we share the relationship from the radio,
right?
And all of that is just a friend and a colleague and all of that. But, you know, some of my fondest memories of Paul were not only on policy issues, but in this studio.
Yeah.
I mean, he was always someone you could call on to talk about anything. And one of the final interviews I was able to do with him, he said, you know, if I come on, I want to have a conversation too with my fellow county executive, David Crowley. And so we got the two of them in the studio. I think it was a Brewers game or opening day or something. And they both came down and had just the most interesting conversation. And the relationship was so authentic and real. And it went both ways. And it was so impressive and such a lesson, so many lessons.
Yeah. And what I loved about Paul is I think he understood that something that a lot of politicians don't understand is there's a need for more collaboration. There's a need for understanding the other side, listening to the other side. And he was so good at that. And obviously his mom and all of that. I think you said yesterday that that's where you knew the Farrell name.
I knew Paul Farrell, but I knew his mom even better. Yeah. She was actually one of the reasons I give her credit for helping me start my career. She was on the board for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, right, and she helped bring me into that organization. I was able to serve as the public affairs director, but I got to know Paul then too, obviously through his service, and then working on the Act 12. We would work on 94 East West, American Family Field, anything that involved collaboration, even Waukesha Water. I mean, he just was involved in so much. And the other thing that was so important is how he created this culture. All the people that worked for him, Dale Shaver, even Amanda Payne, the chamber exec, they are all of that mindset. Like, we have to work together.
Ultimately, what do you think his legacy will be? I mean, 61 is far too young. As someone who's 67, almost 68, I see that and I go, whew. And he did a lot. He served in the legislature. He's obviously served as a Washington County executive. What is his legacy, you think?
I think, you know, it's funny you ask that. His legacy will transcend his political party because obviously he, you know,
Republican.
Served as the chair for the Republican Party in Wisconsin, Republican legislator, but just really just a friend and somebody who got things done through listening. He listened and he would always make that call. The personal call. I know when he took on the co-chairmanship of Milwaukee 7, he probably called everybody in his network to make sure they knew before it was in the press. And he just knew how to handle a situation to make sure it got done the right way.
Yeah, excellent communicator. We talked about the collaborative skills. Just, I wish there were more people like Paul Farrell because I think our process and ultimately the end results would be much better. We still have, I think, conflict where conflict doesn't need to be, but I think Paul got that, understanding the importance of communication. You know this well because you're a great communicator. Having those conversations, tough conversations.
Mm-hmm.
He never shied away from them. He was very honest in his approach to politics, which I love. And he, as you said, he served as the director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin for a year, I think 21, 22, somewhere around there. I was impressed by him and he will be missed in our community, in our state. I wish there was more people like him.
But I think we can all you know, take comfort in that the fact that he probably inspired a lot of people.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was very inspired by obviously his mother and talked about her all the time. And I think he will have done the same for many people around him. And we might not be able to recognize it right now, but as we look forward and as more people get into the political arena, I think he made it okay to be that type of leader. You don't have to be super partisan. You can just be focused on getting things done, and working across the aisle is just, that was one of the most impressive things to me. So he was never afraid. And even, I'll give you another example. When Waukesha County was looking at their sales tax increase, I know that was controversial.
Oh, yeah.
And he was all for it. But you know what? I think he was willing to listen to others, and he ultimately stepped back from that. And I think it's because that's how he operates.
And he sought out other solutions.
Yes.
And, you know, they're still trying to figure all that stuff out. So, yeah, I wanted to make sure that we talked about that. We're going to talk about some other things, including the I-794 comments of the mayor of Milwaukee and other things, because you're the president and CEO of CarW, and you have your finger on the pulse of a lot of things happening with economic development and things happening in the city of Wisconsin and beyond. She's Tracy Johnson, president and CEO of CarW. She's my guest this hour on WTMJ. Quick break. Tracy Johnson sitting here with me as Kristen gets better from her bout of, she was coughing like crazy yesterday. We did a podcast. If you haven't checked it out, The Death of Expertise. Everybody's an expert now, but in fact, there's real experts, and why don't we listen to them more? So we did a podcast on that yesterday, the Overtime Podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or at WTMG.com. Tracy Johnson, president and CEO of CarW. How long have you been president and CEO now?
Just over 12 years.
Wow.
I love this job. And I love the people I work with.
Yeah, and you know your way around WTMJ, both on Capitol Drive, yep, and here. You've been around. When's the last time you were in studio for anything? Do you remember?
Actually, I was in a couple months ago. I was on the afternoon show.
Oh, my goodness.
With Taylor Corson, who we were actually talking about I-794.
Yeah, which we're going to talk about in a second.
Which might be a good segue, but yes.
So the mayor made some headlines yesterday. And,
yes.
And I jokingly, because I get angry. Well, angry's not the word. Irritated by freeway deniers who just want to rip all the freeways down and drive on city streets and then cause traffic jams and don't really care about anything other than what they think is a ridiculous use of concrete and steel, which most of us love because we get around quicker. But beyond that,
how do you really feel, Steve? Yeah,
the mayor said that his idea is sort of that slimmed down version of keeping it up elevated, mm-hmm, which I completely agree with.
Yep.
First of all, your take on what his take was. Do you think that's sort of where this is going? Because the DOT ultimately will decide.
The DOT is ultimately going to decide. I think the mayor's response, our organization supports his recommendation to keep it as is, elevated, make some improvements involving all those stakeholders. As you may be aware, CarW did some independent research that helped, I think, move that conversation to more of a regional dialogue, to say, you know, this is not just about Milwaukee, but this is a regional asset. 75,000 cars and trucks use that freeway corridor every day. And how do you function as a region? So we talked to business owners. We did the economic impact analysis. Tearing it down would lead to, you know, $450 million a year. It was just, it was insane from an economic standpoint.
As somebody who lives in the world of commercial real estate,
mm-hmm,
this argument that somehow this was going to open up all these properties, we have properties available on that stretch right now that, yes, I think they're still available, right?
They are available. And it was interesting because I look at some of the comments and they say, oh, the only people pushing for this are the developers. And like, I work with all those people and they're not pushing for this. We work with property owners and people who operate businesses in and around this area. And they're saying, listen, I made this investment. I made this decision because we have access to this freeway and because my employees have access to this corridor. Northwestern Mutual is building a whole new building for tens of thousands of employees. How are those people going to get there? So right now, I'm interested in the conversation moving forward is how do we make this better for the way our world is right now.
What would that mean? What is that when you say better? What is what in your mind? What does that mean?
There are certainly some opportunities to improve the access points, particularly right.
that we all agree on. I think.
Yep. As it pertains to Van Buren, I think we have an opportunity to look at how we activate the area in and around. There are already steps being made. You've got the Foxtown Brewery. You've got the dog park, the pickleball park. You've got more opportunities to do that. And I think being creative in how you invest in that is where this conversation needs to go.
One of the things that I think was left off the table, and maybe I just missed it, is when you have this is a major project.
Oh, it's going to cost billions of dollars.
Yeah, and yes. You know, maybe a decade or whatever to get this thing. Because the stadium part is happening right now, the I-94 East-West, and that's going to be a while. And I think we've managed it pretty effectively. But when you're talking a downtown I-794, the impact on local business, some of those restaurants that border on the north side of that stretch, that would be brutal for them. And then not leaving out Summerfest, Festa Italia, all the festivals along the lakefront, all the things that the ways we interact with the art museum, all those interaction points would all be messed up if we don't do this right.
Certainly. And I think a major stakeholder is Summerfest, as you mentioned, making sure that all those people are not just at the table, but that they're being listened to and their concerns are acknowledged and accounted for. And I believe they will be, because this is our opportunity to get it right. In talking to some developers, they said, if we were going to tear this down, we should have done that 20 years ago or 30 years ago. We shouldn't be talking about that today.
All right. So as somebody who works on a lot of big projects and your opinion's asked about a lot of different things, not just here, but statewide, do you think the DOT is going to move in the right direction on this?
I do. I really.
And what gives you that sense of hope?
Well, because of how they're engaging the stakeholders right now, and they're following the process. I mean, they were collecting the data, and I think some people were frustrated with how long it took in terms of the traffic studies and the freight studies and things like that. But all of this has to follow a process. And what people may not always understand is, you know, government moves at the pace that it moves, and you've got not only state interests and county and city interests, but federal interests as well. And I think the mayor made the right call. He was thinking about the taxpayers, right? This is going to be expensive no matter how we do it. And how do we best maximize our regional opportunity and ensure our success?
I'm not a Democrat, but I continue to be impressed by Cavalier Johnson, mayor of Milwaukee, and David Crowley, who made a big announcement yesterday. We're going to talk about that a little bit with you after the breaks. Tracy's sticking around for the whole hour today.
Whatever you need.
I love it. President and CEO of Car W. She's my guest host as Kristen recuperates from her bad cough. Hopefully that's better tomorrow as we do the Friday panelist show. I used to call it the political power hour. Now it's 90 minutes, but it's a fun way to sort of wrap up the week in politics. We'll do that tomorrow, of course, right here at 10, right here on 620 WTMJ. Filling in for Kristen Bry on this Thursday edition of Point Taken is Tracy Johnson, president and CEO of Car W, frequent guest host through many of my iterations of my shows. And I've known you for 10 plus years.
But since I started with Car, we talked about that. You were the mayor of Oak Creek, and we served on that transit board.
That's right. We served on it together.
So, it's been a long time.
We've done a lot of stuff,
Drexel Town Square, I know, is a big thing.
I was just there last night celebrating food truck night, which was wonderful. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of gardening and landscaping in summer, and we're going into our best weather right now. Next week looks like a gorgeous weather week. So enjoy the weekend. It's going to be fantastic. All right. So the big news yesterday, David Crowley dropping out of the race for the Democratic nomination for governor, joining Missy Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on what that means for this race? So that's two gone. I think there's five left. Other people may or may not drop out before the actual primary. What does this do to the race?
Well, I agree with some of the Friday panelists that it's going to be three. And you said to yourself, I think Rodriguez, Mandela Barnes, Francesca Hong. I still think that Francesca Hong has the momentum.
Why do you think that?
Just on the ground, quite honestly. And I mean, that's where I operate, is kind of on the local levels.
Well, you talk to everybody.
I do. And I just get the sense that she has an army of people. She's got a brilliant fundraiser. She said to, I think it was like the food workers or some of the servers and things like that, you give me, a portion of your paycheck, just pennies on the dollar, and I will fight for you. And it's this like recurring fundraising, initiative. And she's just very organized, and she's just got the got the oxygen.
So your prediction, not that you're in the business of making political predictions, you think she will win the nomination in August?
I do, because I think what's happening, as you see, is they're consolidating. A lot of the Democrats traditionally are consolidating around Sarah Rodriguez. I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about that.
Yeah.
Mandela Barnes has the money. But the timing is just so off on all of this. I just think the momentum is all for Francesca Hong. And ballots have already gone out, right? Or it's very soon.
Yeah, I already got mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that mean for the Tom Tiffany campaign?
Tom Tiffany's the governor.
Yeah.
I've watched his I know all of these candidates, and I just get this sense. And I think it is the moment, and, you know, governors who are, or candidates who are likable. You know, he's a likable guy. He's got a great track record.
Does the messaging change? We only have a short amount of time. Yeah. We can do it after the break, too. Does the messaging change if it's Barnes Tiffany versus Hong Tiffany? Is there a different message from the Tiffany campaign?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so. And I think that's the right way to play it. Be yourself. You got to contrast with a candidate, but go with your strengths and your accomplishments.
The best advice I can give Tom Tiffany is, I know he's going to talk a lot about the president, but this is Wisconsin. Tell us what you're going to do and how you're going to do it.
I think that's where this messaging is going. That's where the campaign's going to go.
She is Tracy Johnson, president and CEO of CarW, here for another half hour as we celebrate Thursday on Point Taken. Kristen is off today. Hopefully she'll be back tomorrow with the panelists. Tracy Johnson, president and CEO of CarW, sitting in with me for this hour. We began the show talking about the loss and the passing of Paul Farrell, Washington County. He's like a great guy and somebody that Tracy and I know very well, working with him, meeting him away from politics. And just, it is a sad thing when someone that young, you know, passes away, and he leaves a great legacy. And we're talking a little bit about politics. Let's shift national. You and I don't talk a lot about national politics, but I know you go to Washington, D.C. a lot. You're playing the game.
My second favorite city.
It's probably my second favorite city, yeah, as well, especially Mount Vernon, which I love going to visit. The Graham Plattner story in Maine, out east, is amazing to me because Democrats seem to think they have an opportunity in the midterms. And that may be true because of things they don't like, economy floundering a little bit, although if you look at your 401k, probably not making that argument. And at least half the population is invested in that. You know, you can talk about gas prices, gas and groceries, and I've been critical of this administration on doing some of the things they've done and policy-wise to impact that. But they had a candidate in Maine, U.S. Senate candidate, who won the primary in June, pretty significantly, I think a record turnout among Democrats, who has gotten himself embroiled in now sexual assault allegations, 5 years old. A 41-year-old Maine resident named Jenny Rassicot said that basically he forced her to have sex. He's had image problems with supposedly Nazi tattoos that he says weren't that. They say they're military tattoos, skull and crossbones. Whatever you think about that, as a woman, and as a smart woman on top of that, sort of those kinds of candidates, if you think there's an opportunity to seize something in the Congress, why would you put up Graham Plattner?
It is just an utter disappointment all the way around. Because for the Democrats, they have to be shaking their head saying, man, we had an opportunity, not just because he was a viable candidate and Susan Collins is
vulnerable.
Very vulnerable. Yeah. So they had an opportunity to take the midterms. But I think it's the overarching narrative and the fact that there were so many other Democrats across the country who supported him, who now have their credibility tainted because of their affiliation and support of him. It's also really frustrating that it took multiple women to come forward to ensure that this happened. But now going forward, how does this decision get made?
They're talking about convening a group of 500 Democrats, you know, the players in Maine, that basically they will renominate somebody else.
I mean, the voters spoke.
They did speak, yes.
And the voters knew this information.
Most of it, yes.
Most of this information. So what made them change their mind? That's what's so confusing.
The candidate, at least, Kristen tuned me into this story way before I was paying attention to a Senate race in Maine, and I watched a series of interviews with Graham Plattner and journalists. And I could see that one of the reasons I think he was popular is sort of this Obama message of hope and change and that, and the, and they saw this candidate as someone like that.
Redeemable, or he had kind of a story.
Yes. But again, if your goal as Democrats is to take back the Congress, and eventually take back the White House in 2028, and we'll see how that goes. This is the guy you picked. And does that not cast a, you know, sort of a spell on Democrats saying, you know, you had an opportunity and you just threw it away with this guy?
Absolutely. And I think, again, moving forward, they're going to he's going to take a lot of people down with him, whether it's Bernie Sanders, who full-throated endorsement, whether it's Elizabeth Warren. I mean, it's laughable. You can just play the tape of these people saying, this is the type of man we need in Washington. And then you show a picture of him, you know, raping a woman. Like, that's insane. And how could they not see that coming?
All right, sorry, big picture. Obviously, the main race is one of the races that the Democrats have to win to mm-hmm. take back the Senate. Texas is another one. There's some other races. What is this story now, do you think, due to that narrative that they're going to take back Congress?
They're all going to be grouped together because they fight together, and I think they'll fall together. So I think that if the Republicans were smart, and I already see this happening, they're linking every single person to that this is the way that Democrats operate, that they think, and the type of people they support. I think also the fact that the Democrats, instead of the voters, are going to pick the next person is also a narrative that is going, it's a theme now. We saw it with Kamala Harris.
I was just
going to
say,
Joe Biden.
That's an example where it didn't work out so well.
People are going to start to tie all of this together, and if the Republicans were smart, they would do that.
All right, she's Tracy Johnson, sticking around for about 20 more minutes. The vice president came to town. We'll talk about some of the messaging there, what it means for economic development in our city, and some of those storylines and narratives. We'll talk to Tracy a bit more on the Point Taken show on 620 WTMJ. Tracy Johnson, president and CEO of CarW, my guest co-host for this hour. Jeremy Janine, UrbanWalkie.com, will join us, as he always does, Thursday, second hour. Let's talk about the visit. Yesterday, J.D. Vance came. But in the bigger picture, I think that was more of a, hey, I might be running for president in 2028. That's the feel I got for it. But you know the issues, and you focus on economic development and real estate. From your perspective, whether it's J.D. Vance, whether it's Donald Trump, what is this administration doing and saying that impacts the world you work in?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think J.D. Vance's visit, obviously, if you were going around downtown Milwaukee, I mean, ooh, that was, well, and you got the Steel Days, you got all these things going on. You know, but he was also stumping for, Tom Tiffany and Derek Van Orden. And he was talking about fraud and, it was less about the things that I'm interested in and more about what the administration is really trying to talk about. But when it comes to economic development and commercial real estate and deregulation, things like that, I know from the National Realtors perspective, they applaud a lot of the efforts that they're trying to do around housing and affordability.
That's what I was going to say. The housing thing is big, right?
Yes. And a new study by Ford Analytics just showed that Wisconsin is in need of something like 83,000 new housing units by the year 2030.
How do we get there?
Well, first thing is cost of construction. Second thing is regulation. Third thing, interest rates. I mean, so all of these things are really creating very, very high barriers. And so what can the federal government do to unlock that potential?
There's conversation in the Fed right now. Kevin Warsh, the new director, mm-hmm. new chair, saying we're trying to figure out a rate cut. Rate hike. I mean, it's pretty tenuous right now.
I think there will be a rate cut. I think we have one or two more before the end of the year. I'm trying to think back what people predicted, but they seem to be pretty spot on. And with the jobs numbers where they are, I think everything would suggest a potential rate cut. But the more important thing that I hear echoed from some of the gubernatorial candidates as well is getting rid of some of that regulation. The cost to build any new building. Well, 30% to 40% is tied up in fees and regulation. And now you throw on the fact that in some communities it takes more time. What the Trump administration is trying to do is incentivize states to make that process quicker.
Well, Congress handed him a housing, housing bill, and he won't sign it.
We supported that housing bill.
I know he did.
That was quite frustrating.
Will he get over his anger and sign it?
Well, I think when they have a more mature conversation about the SAVE Act, because of the SAVE Act, I mean, I believe that's why he did not sign it, is because he wanted to make sure that that was part of it. If we can decouple those two things, that housing bill was pretty darn good.
It had bipartisan support, which is not that common anymore.
Well, when it comes to housing, that's what I love about working for the realtors, is we are not red or blue, it's purple. Yeah. And I know that's blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it's really, really true. That's how real estate gets done. And so I believe that the Trump administration, and then working with the states, they do have that opportunity. We've got the Opportunity Zones 2.0 coming out in January 2027. They're creating the zones right now. Dewey Strobel, former senator for Wisconsin, is leading that regional effort. And I think that the way they're putting these policies forward and engaging more people, I think will lead to success.
Think about this question during the break. Yeah. I want you to gauge after the break on Point Taken with Tracy Johnson, our guest co-host, as Kristen is out today. The economic development vitality of Milwaukee. Where do you think we're at? You can do a letter grade. You can do a 1 through 10, whatever. Just, I'm curious where you think, and maybe where we're going in the next few years as a result of where we're at on that scale. So we'll talk to Tracy about that after this on Point Taken. Seems like old times. Tracy Johnson, president and CEO of CarW, and going back to the old studio on Capitol Drive, you used to join me almost weekly for a while, and you always did stuff with Wagner. And
yeah, just saw Jeff Wagner.
How's he doing?
He's awesome, living the dream. I saw him at the golf course.
Happy retirement, because he's golfing a lot, I know that.
Yeah, and just such a great guy. He's so fun.
Obviously, longtime legendary WTMJ radio host and a friend of the station. All right, so I ask you for a report card on Milwaukee economic development. Where do you think we're at?
I think we have a lot of opportunity still before us. Untapped opportunity. I'll give you two examples, and then one thing that really bothers me that we need to figure out.
All right.
So very excited about the new announcement for the first condos downtown.
We talked about that last week. Yeah.
Decades, the Zenith. And I mean, what this shows is confidence in the market, confidence in our economy, and confidence in our city. Now, I don't know if this, you know, how certain this is, but the fact that we're willing to take the risk, and the developer, Tim Gockman and Newland Development, is willing to take this risk. I mean, these are very difficult, stressful, risky projects. And the fact that he's doing it, I think, is very promising for our city and great opportunity for our city.
Will we see more of those?
Yes. Yes. I think if he can show us the way, we will see more.
So like a lot of things in local government, economic development, sometimes you need someone to sort of take us by the hand. That's what this seems like.
It's leadership, and Tim Gockman knows how to get things done.
Yeah.
I don't believe he's doing any incentives, which will help ensure that this project moves forward. You got to have the market rate, and it's got to work. I also think Northwestern Mutual finishing their tower downtown and bringing all those folks into the city, I think, is going to be a game changer.
So I'm still waiting for that grade. Give us a grade.
I'd give it a B right now.
That's good.
I'd give it a B right now.
What's the challenges?
The challenge right now is interest rates, construction costs, the regulation. I think we still got to figure that out. I think the mayor's policy on housing and his focus on housing and some of the things he's doing behind the scenes, which we don't have time to talk about, you got to bring in Luke Knapp in the city or Lafayette Crump.
They're doing something with neighborhoods I thought was really promising. Is that sort of renovation? What is that?
Well, I don't know the details, but that's a lot of big picture stuff. Where we get really stopped up is in the details, in the permitting process, in the transparency, in the approvals. And that's really, they're recognizing that. And they're saying, I want every department throughout City Hall to take a look and figure out how we can do this better. And they're really focused on the how.
As somebody who was a local leader, if you can streamline the process, development will come to you.
Yep,
They're waiting for that. And if we're going to fix housing, and I think most people get across the country and the state that we have to fix housing in some way, form, or fashion, and obviously there's other factors, interest rates, construction costs, we can really, really build something impressive and start to give people opportunities to get into their first home, to buy a condo, a brand new condo, or housing that's affordable. And I think that's the message. If you're a candidate or a local leader that says that, sky's the limit.
Well, and he is saying that. I mean, and it's about mobility and being able to go from an apartment to a house and become a resident and really have roots here. One thing I'm concerned about, and you saw earlier this week, you've got two big properties selling in downtown Milwaukee. Schmidt, R.C. Schmidt, Matt Schmidt is selling not only Vagabond, but Trinity.
So what does that mean?
That means that you've got a big corner on a big entertainment corridor that are going to be dark. And we don't need any more dark restaurants in the city. But it means there's an opportunity for new restaurants to come in. Hopefully that we can sell that vision. A lot of it's tied to security and safety. And I know we need to really focus on that.
All right. A fun one. What do you most love about summer in Milwaukee and Wisconsin?
Well, I'm a festival girl, so Summerfest was like...
It was good. What did you see?
I just went down. I saw the gin blossoms. I didn't go to any of the main stages, gin blossoms. And then most importantly, I was able to get my pin. So I collect the pins.
I didn't even know they still have those.
Oh my gosh, they still have the pin. Actually, they had three pins this year. I got all three. But last year, because I didn't go until later, I missed the pin. It was the first year.
You're looking for that pin.
I am. I should probably make a...
Do you have the old ones?
I have all the old ones.
Because I have like the first 25 years.
Yes, I have all of them.
They're actually in a drawer and I never look at them.
Oh my gosh. We should compare
notes. We should compare notes on it. All right, great. You know, you're good at radio. You should do more of it.
Okay, well, thank you.
We'll have to keep you in mind. Tracy Johnson, President and CEO of CarW. Pleasure to hang out with you for an hour. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Steve.
News is next.
11 o'clock on a Thursday means it's time for a full hour of City Stories with Urban Milwaukee President Jeremy Janine on Point Taken. Everybody wants to
be closer. That would be our cue to start talking. I am Steve Spitty. Of course, Jeremy Janine joins us every Thursday in the 11 o'clock hour. Kristen, as I said earlier, resting that voice. She had a coughing fit yesterday. So stay home, get better. So hopefully she'll be back tomorrow for the panel of the show with Bill. Bill McCutcheon and a guest that we'll tell you about tomorrow for Joseph Pecky, who'll be off. Jeremy, where do we want to start? The vice president was in town, J.D. Vance, spoke at the 128th.
And of note, yesterday was an insane news day. The front page of the Journal Sentinel this morning did not have J.D. Vance on it. Like, that's how much news happened in Milwaukee yesterday.
Interesting.
But what did happen when J.D. Vance was there started even the day before he got here. The White House's press release announcing that Vance was coming talked about fraud. Yep. Didn't say what kind of fraud. Proactively, Mayor Cavalier Johnson issued an open letter and an invitation to J.D. Vance saying, please stop talking about election fraud. There wasn't election fraud in 2020. President Trump won the 2016 election. He won the 2024 election. He did not win the 2020 election. We can all acknowledge that is what the mayor essentially said in total. And I would like to invite you to meet the city's election staff if you have questions. Friend of the show, Monday guest Matt Smith got up yesterday and asked a question then to J.D. Vance. Did you get the mayor's letter? And this is where a politician usually just goes, I didn't see that. I was busy doing vice presidential things.
Oh, he saw it, right?
But he admits he saw it.
Yeah.
Not only that, he then says, I don't have time to come today. But then he issued the mayor an invitation, which I thought was interesting. He's welcome to come to Washington, D.C. I'll sit down with him. I'm happy to meet with him, he says. And Mayor Cavalier Johnson very wisely goes, I accept. I will see you. I'll be in D.C. in September. Can I come? I look forward to meeting with you. The vice president's office has not gotten back to me yet on that response. But Vance did not just extend an invitation back to Johnson to talk about elections. He also said Johnson doth protest too much. And compared Johnson to his six-year-old son, who when Vance recently returned home, his son immediately said that I didn't take any cookies out of the jar. And Vance said that was immediately a sign that he stole cookies. And whether that story is true or not, no one will ever know except the Vance family. But he compared it directly to Cavalier Johnson. And then he said Democrats are the ones that keep talking about election fraud. But then
that's not true.
Vance himself then goes on to admit that Republicans will stop talking about election fraud only when Democrats pass the Save American Act and give voter ID, which, of course, Wisconsin actually has.
All right. That's all politics. And I get it. And the back and forth is sort of a fun way for two politicians, one local, one national, sort of celebrate that, that adversarial relationship. Ultimately, though, if I'm going to be sort of a facts-based show host, 2020 legally is settled.
Very much so.
There's nothing that I've seen, other than people still complaining about the way the election was conducted, but I'll remind people we were in a pandemic, so some of the rules were tweaked a little bit to make it a little bit easier for folks to vote. And I think most reasonable, rational adults, Republican or Democrat, say kind of made sense. We were trapped by the pandemic. You can argue about the pandemic if you want to. I don't argue about it. But when it comes to this, I fully believe that Mayor Cavalier Johnson will go to Washington, D.C. and try to meet with J.D. Vance. I'm not confident that J.D. Vance would meet with him, other than in a public spectacle situation, which is what happens often in these Oval Office at a higher level with foreign officials who come in and they get trapped in the Oval Office, and then it becomes a dog and pony show. Your thoughts?
I think that's a very fair way to see. I think the best outcome for the mayor on this in terms of avoiding political damage is that J.D. Vance is not there and he goes to his front door and films himself knocking on the door.
Yeah.
Vice President,
and I don't know what Cavalier Johnson's social media skills. I've sort of backtracked and pulled away from social media, but maybe that would be funny. Maybe that would be a way to sort of point his finger and say, "I'm here. Where are you?"
And I think the big thing is, come September, when the mayor says he's going to be in D.C. late September, we're going to have a very different tenor on elections.
Yeah.
Because that November election is going to be right around the corner, and it's going to be very high stakes. It already is. But just the nation's attention to it is going to be at a real high.
I don't know, you didn't have it in your outline, but as far as elections go in Milwaukee, is there anything swirling around, anybody talking about anything other than this story right now?
So what the mayor asked is for the FBI to end its investigation into the 2020 election.
Which is going on around the country.
Yeah, primarily in blue or purple states.
Right.
That the FBI recently came and started asking police officers that worked the 2020 election what they saw. Now, we've had the Gableman investigation, we've had the recount, the ballots still exist, which some people are saying legally destroy the ballots now. There's an open court case that seems to prevent that. The mayor just wants that to end, that there's been, as you said, no evidence that there's any fraud here, that the ballots, if you really want to count them, still exist there. But the other risk that I think Will was raising this issue yesterday, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, that you could actually take those ballots and figure out the absentee ballots and figure out who people voted for.
Yeah.
And that is a real risk.
Which most reasonable, rational adults would never, ever want to have happen. I don't care what your political leanings are. That's a bad thing. That doesn't keep your vote secure and safe. And I'll argue about that. And I'm glad Will's on this, at least understanding that as well. All right. To tear down or not tear down, that is the 794 question. After this with Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, 620 WTMJ. As always on Thursdays, 11 o'clock hour, Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, one of the best local news sources, city, county news, and a lot more than that. And because I always do it every show, we tell people they also own a tchotchke shop, which is where?
755 North Milwaukee Street, corner of Milwaukee Mason, and online at UrbanMilwaukeeTheStore.com.
Site of a future. We're actually kicking this idea around because we both owe you a visit, and maybe doing like an overtime podcast in the tchotchke shop. What do you think about that?
It'll be a tight space, but we'll make it fun.
Yeah, so that's something you can look for in the future. All right, I talked a little bit about this with the president and CEO of CarW, Tracy Johnson, earlier, who knows her way around economic development and commercial real estate, certainly. The big pronouncement by the mayor yesterday, talking about I-794.
Yeah, it was nothing but a busy news day yesterday, as we've hit on. And one of those things was the mayor decided to announce how he feels about what should come next for 794. And again, we're talking about the stretch essentially between the Summerfest grounds and the Marquette interchange, particularly the stretch from the public market to the Hone Bridge. The Summerfest grounds right there where it bends the corner. Why is that being talked about? It's a concrete segment from the 1970s. It wasn't rebuilt as part of the Marquette interchange. So something needs to happen there. It needs to be rebuilt in some form. For, I think we're on 3 years now, WISDOT, the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, has been studying rebuild it as is, different boulevard options, and then what they called at one point a slimmed down mainline, and I think this is the issue, or the version you've long favored, but yeah, the freeway improvement plan,
right,
where they would eliminate some of the ramps, the Milwaukee Broadway ramps would be gone. And Jackson Van Buren would be consolidated at Jackson. And then that intersection that everyone hates at the corner on Lincoln Memorial Drive, that also gets redone.
Yeah, so a couple of things. One, anecdotal, but do you think most people support the slim down plan? What are you hearing?
I hear things all over the place. The coalition of people that support the boulevard anecdotally just seems like it quit growing at some point, that everyone kind of dug in on the issue. I think there's a fair amount of people in denial that something needs to happen there. Like, at the very minimum, it needs to get rebuilt. They're like, oh, I don't want the construction. Well, that's not a choice unless you want a freeway that falls down.
Yeah, but taking it down to street level, and I agree with the mayor, it causes immense, at least till you figure it out, traffic problems.
Yeah, so we should be, I don't think we actually said, the mayor's opinion is based on, he says, lots of conversations, lots of data, which the city has been clear now for 2 years that it's been requesting, that the amount of gridlock that it could potentially cause once the boulevard is even built, that he favors the freeway improvement plan, and he's submitting a letter to WISDOT saying he wants an improvement plan. He's agnostic if they're left-hand or right-hand ramps.
Since you brought it up, tangentially related, the area in front of the Couture, which has barrels still, what are we doing there? Like, when is this going to be done?
Are you talking about the Michigan and Lincoln Memorial intersection?
Yeah.
So as all good traffic projects are in downtown Milwaukee, there is a magic date that they needed to get to a state of usability the day before Summerfest, which they hit barely because of the rain. Now there'll be some kind of, that main intersection is done there, but now all the roads emanating out from it get repaved, and there's, if you look closely, the sidewalk's missing. All that stuff should get finished. There is a website that lays out a timeline, and I believe it was the end of July. It's supposed to be largely wrapped up.
All of that, all those cones gone by the end of July.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. Ultimately, this is my big question on this. What sway do you think Mayor Johnson's pronouncement yesterday has with, like, the DOT or people or decision makers?
Well, this is a big thing, because if the mayor made it a fight between the boulevard and the freeway improvement plan, the easiest thing, and this still remains today, the easiest thing for the legislature, which is eventually gonna have to fund this project, is to go with the much cheaper option, just rebuild it exactly as it is. That the plan to put the improvement plan in place will still take somewhere in the ballpark of $500 million more dollars than it would cost the $500 million just to rebuild it as is. So there is still a cost gap that the state's going to have to be willing to accept. And I think now that you have the mayor saying, I want this, and it's in line with what Cudahy, St. Francis, and South Milwaukee have all voted for.
I saw the mayor of Cudahy chimed in on this yesterday somewhere.
And you have groups like Tracy Johnson at CARW, the Greater Milwaukee Committee, saying they also favor the freeway improvement plan. I think you'll see a push at the state level to fund this project starting in 2030, although that is still in the middle of that I-94 construction that's going to last until 2033.
We do know that's not getting cheaper.
It's absolutely not.
And it's minimum $500 million?
That's to rebuild it exactly as it is today, yeah. Is $500 million. The left and right-hand ramps can go up to like $1.1 billion, I believe, is the top of that scale.
Oh, my goodness. Travel around Milwaukee. But here's the thing. As someone who likes, I used to say love freeways, but I got enough hate mail, I stopped saying that. It moves people. It moves commerce. It helps with tourism. I think there's value in freeways, and I know some people don't like them, but let's get to a solution. Let's make it make fiscal sense, and let's find the one that most people think is the right idea. There's always going to be people who support the boulevard stuff. I get it, but again, you and I have talked. I see some of these landscaping beds. They look rough to me, and these are brand new ones right here in Michigan. If you're going to do that stuff, you're going to tweak things and try to make them look pretty, you got to maintain them. And that's always a challenge for city and county. And I think that's something you have to think about. They always look great for the first couple of years. After that, they become refuse areas.
Yeah, we have McKinley Avenue to look at, where the Parkies Freeway was. That I think that the design there, I don't think anyone is happy. I think lots of people are happy the freeway came down, but the resulting street design is probably less than desirable.
Yeah, and I think it was the mayor or someone else said the example of Park East. Yeah, the mayor said Park East and I-794 are sort of different.
Yeah, there's certainly different complications there. Yeah. The river is more of a factor. They've got freeways on both ends. Much the tough situation to make apples to apples.
Jeremy Janine, UrbanWalkie.com, sticking around for the hour, as he always does. I'll end this segment with this text from the 262. The Lincoln Memorial intersection is the definition of stress and anxiety. It is!
Come visit Milwaukee more often. It gets easier.
I take it every damn day, and I don't like it. I look at it, and it's like, that's a mess. Stop that. And we'll get it fixed at some point. And then it will be beautiful and wonderful, just like the Summerfest grounds are and the Art Museum and all that stuff. All right, quick break. Spending the hour with Jeremy Janine. Kristen is off today. Hope she'll be back tomorrow. Recuperating from her cough. All right, so we were talking during the break. We've talked about this Walmart, this Midtown Center story for months, right?
And really, we can go back years. This developer based out of Missouri has bought the former Walmart at Midtown Center. tried to put self-storage in it in 2023. City said no. City then makes a grand bargain 2 years later that says, you can put self-storage in. We'll take the front 50,000 square feet. We'll put in a community use that's yet to be identified, and then a new library, a replacement for the Capitol Library. This grand bargain, party in the front, self-storage in the back. At the last minute...
Political mullets.
Very, very good. The developer then inserts what he calls an edge site, high performance, essentially a very small data center. Very much unlike all these big Mount Pleasant, Port Washington things.
Not
we
to
see.
The protesters, though.
Yes, so, but it incites all this opposition about what it is. Then this whole grand bargain threatens to come apart. The developer not seeing a pathway forward with the city plan commission, and because they took a weird vote that just says we're going to hold it. They didn't give any guidance. Pulls the plug on the data center component. I haven't actually had a chance to review the updated plans. I assume that 19,000 square feet for the data center is going to become more self-storage because he needs to finance, he being Trent Overhue, his side of the development to be able to essentially give the city its part for free in the front of the mullet.
Is this where you thought this story would go? I mean, it's just conjecture.
It is not, because looking at what this, quote, data center really is, it doesn't have the externalities of all these other buildings, the noise, the power consumption. And the Department of City Development had put in so many safeguards on ensuring that there wasn't noise that I thought the plan commission would approve it.
So you don't have to answer if you don't want to because you're a journalist. Is this this decision a byproduct of what I would call political hysteria over data centers?
I think the hearing, this is my subjective interpretation of what happened 2 weeks ago. That hearing went off the rails for so long that I think it scared a lot of people. And that includes the developer, it includes the plan commission, that things that people expected to happen in terms of it being approved didn't happen. And now we have a reaction here. And I think the question then becomes what happens the next time something like this is proposed?
All right, so we got a few seconds before we get to some more serious stories after the break. Are you storming the Bastille tonight?
Absolutely. One of my favorite nights of the year, 9 p.m. You'll catch me on all the downtown streets.
So are you a runner or a walker?
I'm definitely a runner, trying for 22 minutes.
That's aggressive. My best time was like 20, and that was many years ago. That's good.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. The weather should be all right for it
tonight.
What's
your running shoes of choice?
Oh, I just actually got new ones delivered yesterday there. I believe an Asics pair. Yeah,
don't wear those. Break those in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. All right. That's my tip. As a former marathon runner, I get that. It's all about the shoes and your conditioning and your training. But you'll do well. And I hope you got to break. What's your time? You got to break 22?
22 is my goal. So all right, well, close to 7 minutes.
Going
to
be humid, not as hot, though. As I said, Jeremy Jardine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, always visits with Kristen and I on Thursdays, second hour. And Kristen is off today, resting and recovering that voice so she can be in full throat tomorrow as we welcome the panelists on our Friday conversation. This conversation has existed for a long time. The cost of fixing, renovating, replacing, whatever it is, the Milwaukee County Courthouse.
Yeah, we should talk about exactly what that means because it's a little bit misunderstood. There is now a good rendering to give you a picture. There's the courthouse, what you think of,
this
big stately building that Frank Lloyd Wright called like a $1 million rock pile or something like that. To the right of it, if you're facing the front of it from Kilbourne Avenue, is the safety building.
Right.
And that historically contained the jail. It's where the DA is. Most importantly, that's where all the felony criminal cases happen. Mm-hmm. So when you see a big murder trial, it's not actually happening in the traditional courthouse.
Yes.
It's happening in the safety building.
That wing.
When you're in that complex, unless you're paying attention, you actually don't notice that the skywalks take you through the jail and then into the safety building. So it all kind of functions as one place. The problem is it functions as one place for everyone. Defendants get shuttled through the main hallways, as Hannah Dugan revealed. Jurists get shuttled through the main hallways. Bad conflicts there.
For perspective, how old is that complex?
I think everything that we're talking, with the exception of the jail, is more than 100 years old.
Yeah, I mean, it's as old as old gets when you talk about Milwaukee, basically. I mean, other than some historic buildings.
Right. And we've learned a lot as a society about how we should operate our criminal justice system, and that doesn't include mixing defendants and witnesses and victims before the trial. And there's also concerns about heating. I was just talking to the DA, Kent Laverne, last week about, like, what's air conditioning like in there? And then he just kind of laughs. And
right, yeah. Because that's where he works.
Yeah. So that it's in a bad shape, and it's a high risk for really bad things to happen operationally. Obviously, the Hannah Dugan thing is somewhat of an outcome of this odd system we have.
All right. So most people, again, reasonable, rational adults, agree something needs to be done. I mean, that's a given.
Chris Abley kind of set this in motion that we actually need to do something. David Crowley has really taken up the mantle with Chris Abley when he's county executive. Now county executive David Crowley's like, we're going to do this. And it was what kind of locked in to replace the safety building, not the Frank Lloyd Wright derided courthouse, but the safety building to the side, place that with a modern courthouse that had a staggering price tag of $490 million. So the morning of July 2nd, we published an article talking about the cost that if you own a $250,000 home in Milwaukee County, which is the median home, for the next 20 years, assuming that's how long the debt lasts, it would cost you $88 a year to pay for this new courthouse. So every county resident, essentially every county property owner, is looking at like $2,000 to pay for this new facility because the state doesn't seem to want to give up more than a couple million dollars. Well, later that day, the Crowley administration announces, well, surprise, the costs are actually closer to $800 or $900 million now, which means that $88 figure is probably going to double. And then you get into weird scenarios where that $88 assumption is based on 20-year debt. Well, maybe we'll stretch it out longer so per year it's smaller.
That was my question. So there's only two ways you can go there. You can do it the way they're proposing, or you can stretch it out.
Which might mean you're paying $88 for 40 years.
Yes.
And that means the project's actually more expensive because of your interest rates.
Yeah. So, I mean, where do you think ultimately this is going to fall?
My gut says is the county will take the longest debt it can possibly get, which actually just makes it more expensive rather than take the short-term political pain. The grand bargain they should try and get is they need more money from the state here.
I was just going to say, so is the possible, not solution, but help coming from the state that we got to get this done. It's an important building. It has really significant ramifications on what happens in Milwaukee for safety. Is there a source from the state that says, okay, we can chip in or whatever?
One of the things the state did when it came to the Baird Center was with no money, they issued a loan guarantee, which lowered the borrowing interest rate for the Baird Center. It saved something like $50 million.
Not insignificant.
If you can let the county, which is technically an arm of state government, use the state's bonding authority, you could save significant money that way. I think there's lots of opportunities where the state could kind of nip and tuck to reduce that borrowing figure.
Peter on the text line, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talking text line, asked an interesting question. So they tore down the annex building, of course, to widen I-43. Would that have any relevance to the current conversation?
I'm not totally familiar with what's in it, other than there wasn't courtrooms in the annex building. It was administrative offices. The county has dramatically downsized the number of offices it has.
Yeah. All right. So some courthouse news. Here's another story that we've been talking about a lot. Marty Brooks. That story's not over yet. We'll discuss with Jeremy Janine from UrbanMilwaukee.com after this.
988 Wisconsin Lifeline. How can I help you?
Continuing our conversation with Jeremy Janine for UrbanMilwaukee.com. Marty Brooks, back in the news.
Marty Brooks, when he was terminated for cause, that was a shorthand for what actually happened, which is to trigger this 30-day provision in his contract. Wisconsin Senate District Board, which is a tax-funded entity made up of county, city, and state employees, runs the Baird Center, High Life Theater, Panther Arena. They do that on June 8th. That gives Marty Brooks until July 8th to appeal his termination. He is, in fact, doing that. Interestingly enough, he's represented by Stephen Kravitz. He's decided to make his appeal in public. He's asked the board, who's met. We've talked about extensively, that they've met at many, many, many hours in closed session. Marty Brooks wants this appeal to be an open session. You could interpret that as maybe he doesn't think he's going to win, but he thinks he's going to clear his name by doing it in public because it'll be a media spectacle, certainly.
It's risky.
It absolutely is risky because you could have more dirty laundry come out.
Well, why? I mean, at that point, why not? I mean, if he's going to fight it.
That, I think, is the calculus. The other thing, and this was based on sources right after the June 8th thing, this could all just be a preliminary thing to a settlement where he withdraws his appeal in exchange for some payment to not have this big in public spectacle.
So you think that's likely?
I don't know that I'd say it's likely. I think that's still on the table.
Interesting. So on that timeline, what's going to happen?
July 22nd, 8 a.m. is the day. I assume I'll be there with Adam Roberts, my friend Tom Dakin from the Journal Sentinel, Rich Kirchen from the Business Journal. We'll all have a good time.
You guys ever hang out and just have coffee and donuts while you're doing your job?
Actually, if you're interested in meeting with any of us, the Milwaukee Press Club does host happy hour events that most of us are in attendance at.
As a member of the Milwaukee Press Club, I should probably go to some of those events. All right, quickly, before we get to the last break of this second half hour, Obviously, David Crowley made some news yesterday. Candidate for the obviously Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley dropping out of the race. Second candidate to drop out and essentially endorse Rodriguez. Although, was there some question about whether he did or not? Or
so that actually the news he made yesterday is I'm out.
I'm out.
The news he made this morning is I'm backing Sarah Rodriguez and I want the other candidates to drop out too and back her. And he says it's.
I didn't hear that last part. So
it's the path forward for Democrats, he says.
And you know, talking about politics for a living, that's basically. I would argue, my opinion, it's some fear about this expectation that Francesca Hong, a Democratic Socialist, might be on her way to winning the nomination. So some of the other candidates saying, don't like that reality. They're all essentially falling in line, at least two, to say we have an alternative to that. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's what's happening. There's now a consternation between... Consternation is not a fair thing for a democracy. Rodriguez and Barnes are both trying to fill the same lane as the alternative to Hong, and whether that allows one of them to get over the top of what Hong actually gets. Again, with a wide field, you could have a winner of the Democratic primary in August with 25-30% of the vote, especially if Barnes, Rodriguez, and Hong all continue to stay in the race.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, that slim margin matters, especially when you're trying to win a chance to go up against Tom Tiffany in the in the general. We'll take an early break because there's a bunch of stuff. I'm going to throw a question in about something I was watching when I was going over the Hone Bridge this morning or looking at that I have a question about. We'll get to that with Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Where's the tchotchke shop again for somebody?
755 North Milwaukee Street, corner of Milwaukee Mason. And for this week, it's real close to Bastille Days. Come visit us, then visit Bastille Days.
That's a good connection there. All right, quick break, 620 WTMJ. Last few minutes with Jeremy Gini for UrbanMilwaukee.com, a great local resource for all things city and county news and a lot of fun stuff as well. Before I get to some of the sort of the tidying up of the extra stories you've covered, I drive over the Hone Bridge. I see the tops of these, of the port buildings. They look like a mess, those roofs.
Well, one of the problems is the seagulls contribute to that mess.
They do, yes, they do.
One piece of bread they eat at a time. But so on April, I think it was 27th, that crazy 80-mile-per-hour wind gust.
Yeah, destroy that one.
Put trees on my house and ripped the roof off one building. There was actually a salt mixing little facility in there for bags of salt. That stuff.
Why is that not fixed, though?
My understanding is there's an insurance process that's still playing out there between the 10th.
What year was that?
April.
Of this year?
Yeah.
Okay. I get that.
And then, yeah, there's some old buildings who I think date to around the time of the St. Lawrence Seaway. That's the 1950s. That the roofs have been repaired but not replaced, and the port is slowly looking at replacing those.
Yeah, I just think it would dress it up. I'm not that ports are necessarily, you know, nice looking, but it just looks a little messy. Anyway.
There was a roof replaced recently. Attorney Craig Mastinudo, who's on the Harbor Commission, suggested, you know, we should look at, like, putting branding on these roofs for, like, welcome to Port Milwaukee or
something. Slogan.
Yeah.
So yeah.
There's people thinking about improving things.
Public-private, then I'm a big fan. All right, so let's talk Bayview a little bit.
Yeah, my neck of the woods, just south of the port, just west of the port, in one of these sites' case. We have the Army Reserve site, which is, if you take Lincoln Avenue to the far eastern end, there's this vacant 5-acre lot. It's a grass lot. Then Balua Britain is to the south. So this grass lot is called the Army Reserve site because after World War II, you needed a place to house veterans.
Yep.
And they built what are Quonset huts, basically. UrbanMilwaukee freelancer Carl Baer actually grew up in one of them for a little bit, the author of the City Streets book. The city is now moving forward on possibly redeveloping the site. The 2023 Bayview plan envisioned lower density on the west side, closer to homes, and then closer to 794, larger buildings, maybe as tall as 14 stories. There is a community meeting on July 20th at South Shore Pavilion, open house style. Come share your input on what you'd want to see there. Also, if you go to the Engage MKE website, there's more information on that, or on Urban Milwaukee. Going further west in Bayview, down Lincoln Avenue, there was a affordable housing development across from the former Clements factory. Three duplexes would be demolished, 100 units of affordable housing developed in its place. Marina Dmitrievich, the alderwoman, had kind of held up that deal, and then it emerged that there was this key July 31st deadline that also impacted that Midtown data center development. There has now been, as of Tuesday, a kind of a kumbaya moment where it's been approved. You had Alderman Bauman still saying, I wouldn't approve this in my district, but Marina said she didn't object. She didn't support it, but she didn't object to it. So that development appears safe to move forward.
Somebody asked me this in email, I think, because I'm a big fan of Bayview. I actually had restaurant jealousy for a long time when I was mayor of Oak Creek because they do a lot of cool things there, and it's a great neighborhood and great part of our city. What's the magic of being, obviously they're on the lake. I mean, it helps. Whenever you have that, you always have that extra thing that other communities don't have. What's the magic of Bayview, do you think?
I think the magic of Bayview compared to the East Side was the East Side has always held its value more. If you went back to Bayview and even as late as like the 1990s or early 2000s, it was not as valuable as it should have been given the proximity to the lake, right, proximity to downtown. Then people kind of discovered it. A lot of the housing has been then slowly upgraded. A lot of it is, I mean, I look at my house in particular, 1,500-ish square feet. I found notes that like as many as 8 people lived in it once, and that's hard to imagine. So you're seeing a lot of housing being reconfigured dramatically. That's created a lot of affordable opportunities for people. Same for restaurants, yeah, underused commercial space.
And again, if you live in this area and you have not been to Bayview for the restaurants or whatever, just the fun stuff, the beer garden, all whatever you want to do, it is a great place on a great lake, obviously, and I encourage you to check it out. That's my promotion speech for Bayview. All right, quickly, there's some sites for sale. Water Street?
Yeah, I want to just put a marker because I think we'll be talking about this in the future. We saw with kind of the Water Street violence problem that just hasn't gone away for a bunch of different reasons. Again, it's primarily an issue with loitering, not the bars themselves inside, although that's the attraction for people. Dukes and Scooters on the corner of, I think it's Juno and Water, is now closed and for sale. Supposedly there's an agreement to sell it. I've been told who it's being sold to, and that person denies they're buying it. I think it's going to end up that person's buying it. But now Vagabond is closing, which is on Highland, just off Water Street, and Trinity, which is a collection of three Irish bars. Both those properties are owned by R.C. Schmidt and his family, who you'd best know from Water Street Brewery. Mm-hmm. But they've owned Brew City Barbecue going back years, many different restaurants and bars. Both those properties are now for sale. I look at just, are we at this point now where we're going to see Water Street about to change dramatically? I'm just putting the marker that I think we're headed there.
I agree with you. Jeremy and Janine, we'll do it again next Thursday?
Absolutely.
All right, news is next, 620 WTMJ.